Here's the news in 60 seconds from yumadailynews.com. The votes are in for the city of Yuma. Mayor Nichols will still be in office after having 58% of the votes. Candidates for the city council will move to the general election in November at a rate of 2 candidates per seat. Learn more about the final votes, yumadailynews.com. The latest data is in. Border Patrol has been seeing a 246% increase in border crossings in the Yuma area specifically. That's just in the past year. The White House says Mexico has promised to invest $1.5 billion in border infrastructure over the next couple of years. Learn more about the increase locally, yumadailynews.com. In Padres news, Fernando Tatis' dad spoke about his son taking the steroid that got his son suspended for 80 games. He says Tatis got a fungal infection on his neck from a haircut. San Diego's president of baseball says it's a lack of trust between the team and player. Tonight's game is at 6:40. Listen to the games live on AM560 KBLU and get the latest Padres news at yumadailynews.com. For the latest local and state stories, go to yumadailynews.com. I'm Kendra White.
Strong thunderstorms produce some heavy rain in spots across southwestern Arizona. And as a result, we did see some flooding. And that potential for flooding with these thunderstorms continues today and tomorrow. There's a flood watch from 11 o'clock this morning until Saturday evening. A few showers and thunderstorms will develop today in the afternoon. They could be heavy rainmakers. Temperatures near 100 this afternoon. I'm meteorologist Terry Smith from the Weather Channel.
The opinions voiced in this show, Money Talk, are for general information only and not intended for specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management investment advisory services are offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Carson Partners, a division of CWM LLC, is a nationwide partnership of advisors.
Hey Yuma, this is Money Talk. This is Money Talk. Tom Rush here. Good Friday, everybody. Wynn here. Today we're going to talk about the 401k plans and the importance of understanding how a 401k works. And we actually have a guest speaker on who's going to be on the phone here from Phoenix. Her name is Erin Lopez. She's a CPA, but she also, with her job, she audits 401k plans for the IRS.
What?
Yeah, audits.
What? Does she have an AK-47 or an M4? What does she carry?
AK-10, I guess. I don't know. She works for a private firm. Her dad started this firm, and she kind of goes in and audits. And I actually met her at a conference up in Phoenix, and we sat next to each other. Uh-huh. And it was like a two-day conference. We started talking. And I inquiring more about what she did and such. I told myself, you know, this is good info for business owners, especially.
Especially with more IRS agents coming on board, do we need to be afraid? What do we need to know to do? Make sure we pay close attention to, for sure.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of moving parts with the 401k, and hopefully this session we're going to talk more about it. And we're actually having a seminar next week, August 24th. And it's going to be from noon to 4. It's completely a learning session. We'll provide a box lunch. It's at AWC next to the Schoening Center. And she's going to come down and be the speaker the educator. So we kind of wanted to get her on to pre-talk about some things we'll be talking about. So
excellent.
Yep. So at this point, I don't know if Erin's on the phone.
She's on the phone.
I am. Yes, I am here.
She heard your whole introduction, Tom.
Oh, okay, good. I wasn't sure if you were on or not. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for that introduction. I look forward to talking with you today.
Yeah, so, you know, we handle quite a few 401ks in the community, and there's moving parts that, you know, people don't understand, and it usually takes them a while to get comfortable with these moving parts. And a lot of times, It's reactive, meaning there's a problem, we try to fix it. And I thought by having you come down to Yuma and talk next week at this program or educate, that we can get business owners, comptrollers, maybe payroll people that have some interest to get more educated about this area. So if you don't mind, just a little background on yourself and your firm and such. I mentioned to the listeners, I met you up in Phoenix at a two-day conference, and we got talking, and I thought to myself, hey, this would be great if she could come down and talk to our business owners on their plans. But go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So just a little bit about me. I work for Evers Robinson. We're an accounting firm located in Phoenix, Arizona. We actually specialize in 401k audits. So those are actually the only types of audits we do, which make us, able to be really knowledgeable about what this one specific area. I started as a staff auditor, just kind of learning the ropes, getting my feet wet. And over the past 6 years, I've gotten my master's in accounting and most recently my CPA license as well. And just exactly what you said, we're kind of seeing that most plan sponsors are reactive. And so this program, this seminar was kind of born out of how can we help that change? How can we make it less reactive?
Yeah, now let's talk about some moving part or the different people involved in a plan. So just so the listeners know, there's the financial advisor who should be, maybe spearheading the plan or involved in it. There's a third-party administrator who's, we can talk about that in a little bit, but I tell people it's kind of like having a glorified accountant who gets involved to make sure the plan's government compliant. They also have to sign off on the 5500 tax forms. And then there's also the CPA, because more times than not, you want to make sure that the CPA for the business owner is blessing everything and making sure that it makes sense. And then you have the actual company that is doing the payroll and other things to make sure this plan is ran right. So there's about four moving parts on here. So let's first talk about the TPA. If you can just briefly explain what that is, and I could pipe in what a third-party administrator does.
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, a TPA is a third-party administrator. I think what's unique about a TPA is their role can actually look different for each plan, depending on their interaction with the plan. So sometimes plans have a third-party administrator, and that's all that they do. They're the ones who are going to prepare your 5500. They're the ones who are going to do your compliance testing at the end of the year. And hopefully, they'll be the ones who will be a really great resource for the plan sponsor if they have any questions. If they notice anything when they're administering their plan that they need just a little bit of extra help with. There's also instances with which we see that the TPA in bundled services. So sometimes you can see that the third-party administrator is also the person who holds the assets and also the person who keeps the records. So the TPA can be all things to the plan, or it can be just this unique set of services that they offer that I outlined at the beginning.
And with your experience, a lot of plans are bundled, right? Would you say that's true?
I would say it's a good mix. I would say when plan sponsors are looking for a little bit more assistance, right, a little bit more ability to rely on the services of a third-party administrator, they typically go for something unbundled just to get a little bit more of that personal service. But I would say a lot of plans are bundled. You're going to see your same third-party administrator that you get your records from.
And when you say bundled, Tom, you mean like just by one plan from one person? Or
yeah, it's kind of like having an umbrella, and in that umbrella, they're doing multiple things. So they
without your involvement, they're just you're buying a program of some kind.
So, I mean, in our case, we're still involved, but Basically they're holding the asset. They have a menu of what assets can be bought as far as mutual funds, and they get involved in the record keeping. There's some other things that they can get involved with. Regarding controlling the plan. So it's kind of like having everything under one roof scenario.
And if it's unbundled, then you would be involved with what, individual type stocks every day or something and looking at?
Well, a lot of our plans are actually unbundled because we can be more competitive on our pricing. Because a lot of times when you go to a bundled plan,
you're paying for the overhead.
You're paying, and it's pre-cammed. The mutual funds are mm-hmm. pretty much pre-cammed, so you don't have much of a selection. So by us being unbundled, we can go out and choose from, many different funds and we feel more competitive.
And you have to be more engaged in that, watching it regularly, I would assume.
More engaged but not too much, because, it's pretty simple to sift through funds that are good with the low expense ratios.
All right.
So to give you a quick idea what I mean by that, the lineup we have in our 401k plan, the expense ratio is 5 basis points, which is like, very cheap. And a lot of plans out there, especially the bundled plans, and I could talk about, American Funds and some other families, that their expense ratios might go from like, 0.3, 0.4 up to like 0.8, 0.9. So there's a huge difference on the underlying fees there too. Now, when you usually get called into a position, is that because someone's being audited, right? And they follow up with you?
Yes. So typically from an audit perspective, when plans get big enough, they require an audit to be able to file that Form 5500, which is the form that they have to file on an annual basis. And so that's when they would come to us and say, hey, we've got to get this done. Can you come in and audit our plan?
And that's more than 120 some people. What's the head count?
Who would call you to audit? Would the individual companies just call you and say, hey, we'd like for you to audit to make sure we're okay? Or does IRS call you?
So individual companies.
Individual, okay.
So for that filing requirement, it's the plan sponsor. So the company who's kind of putting the 401k out there, they realize their third-party administrator says, hey, you're going to need an audit. Line that up. And then they call us and they say, hey, we're supposed to get this thing done. Especially if it's new to them, they're like, we just know we need you. Can you come in and kind of do what you need to do so that we can get filing on time?
So it's either customary or required.
It's required. Okay. So that doesn't mean that some companies don't bring in consultants, right? To come in and take a look to make sure that they're good ahead of time. But when you need an audit to file, at that point, it's required. You cannot file your Form 5500 without an auditor's report.
And it's required at a certain amount of employees. What's the headcount on that?
So if it's a brand new plan, so you're just starting for the very first time, if you start with 100 or more, you need an audit. If you have had your plan for a long time and you're just kind of in a growth phase, it's as soon as you hit that 120 mark, and those are at the very beginning of your plan year. So that's when the participants are counted, is at the beginning of your year versus the end.
Okay. Now, I assume you also get some calls of plans that are, because if you don't do the plan right, all this money could come back and become a taxable event for the employer.
Yes.
Penalties.
Ouch.
Yep.
So we'll talk about that when we get back, but we're going to take our first break. This is Money Talk, 560 AM.
Derek Eggeberg, branch manager with Academy Mortgage here, NMLS number 1808.99, with Academy Mortgage, inspiring hope, delivering dreams, and building prosperity, where we help individuals and families build a foundation for their future by providing opportunities to obtain home ownership through unique products and services. Academy Mortgage is an equal housing lender, NMLS number 3113, Arizona license number 0904081.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary, obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk. Tom Rush here, coming back online. We got our guest, Erin Lopez, who's out of Phoenix. She, for a living, audits 401k plans. We'll be doing a learning seminar for about 4 hours, August 24th, out at the college. if any listeners are interested in becoming more involved in how to get their retirement plan to run more smoothly, please call the office.
What time of day are you going to do that, Tom?
Noon to 4.
Noon to 4.
Yeah, noon to 4. And August 24th is, I don't have my calendar in front of me. Is that a Wednesday, maybe? I'll let Russ check that out.
I'll check it out,
Russ.
So, Aaron, let's talk about the powerful plan document, because I think the plan document shows up in different sizes and forms and such, but it's a very powerful tool to understand the plan. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So a plan document is the document that guides the entire plan, right? And it's actually a legally binding document. So this is signed by the plan sponsor, the company that's putting on the 401k plan in most instances. And it's saying all the provisions of the plan, right? So this document is the outline, the guide as to how the plan should be run. Okay, it's got all of the important provisions, and typically it's a check the box form. So plan sponsors, companies, they get to choose exactly how they want the plan document to be, as long as it falls within, you know, specific regulations.
Correct.
And this is the document that dictates how it should be run. And honestly, the plan document and how the plan should be run is where we find most of the issues. Is that people don't necessarily know what their plan document says, or are operating their plan the way that they think that they should, what they think their plan document says, and that's when things can be a recipe for trouble, for costly corrections.
Yeah, so the plan document's kind of a roadmap and how the plan's going to be managed. I've actually looked at them and helped some employees fill out. You know, we had to actually call, and we had questions on it. And the plan document, I mean, the one that I remember, you know, is pretty long. It's like, what, 25 pages or something, and there's a lot of different check the box. But the typical person probably would need help understanding what each check the box means and to be filled out.
Exactly. Yeah, I would say the adoption agreement. That's the check the box form of the plan document. I would say that a normal person who doesn't interact with 401ks every day would need a little bit of help understanding it. And I think that's really great about the seminar that we're putting on Wednesday, is we actually spend a little under half the amount of time on Wednesday educating about that plan document and kind of going through the different pieces and the different pieces that are especially important for a plan sponsor, a payroll person, a controller, pretty much anybody who touches the plan in any way to really know about their plan.
Now, if you had a plan and say the boxes were checked, and then you went to the seminar and realized that we're not utilizing this, we're not utilizing that, or there's a something more enticing to use, then they have to do what, an amendment to the plan?
Yes. So if they wanted to change the way that the plan is kind of written in certain ways, they would draw up a formal amendment with whoever did their plan document.
And now, when those formal amendments and things are done, are they registered somewhere? Do you have to send them off to an office to be registered with the state?
They're not registered with the state, no. They are registered with whoever your document sponsor is. So,
okay.
Like if you have a TPA, for example, they should have a signed copy of that. But you also need to keep a signed copy, because if an auditor were to ever come in, me or someone from the IRS, the Department of Labor, that's one of the first things that they're going to want to see. And I do want to stress the signed piece. A copy of your signed document is critical for you to have on record, because that's what you're saying you're governing your plan with.
So you would want to have a file with all the signed documents and any signed amendments all together.
Absolutely. That's a very important piece.
Now, when those are signed, and they're signed strictly by the creator of the business, or you recommend that the CPAs sign it also? I mean, who signs these?
So the person who's responsible for the plan is going to sign that. So that can be the owner of the company.
Yeah.
That can be a named trustee. So in your document, you can actually name specific individuals who are going to be responsible for that plan. Then they would sign it. So it can really depend. I don't I've not seen an instance in which an outside party has taken responsibility for that plan document. Typically going to be internal.
Yeah, and for the most part, I mean, it's the business owner, right? That's probably, you know, 90% plus. Now, they don't, what kind of obligation are they taking by signing the plan? Because as you know, a lot of business owners are good at what they do, but sometimes the 401k lane's not their expertise. But they are taking like a fiduciary responsibility to manage that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, when you're signing that plan document, you are acting as a fiduciary. So you're saying that you're going to take care of this plan, that you're going to do certain things, you're going to do your due diligence with investments, for example, right? Like that's hiring an investment advisor who's knowledgeable, who can monitor those investments for you. That's just one example. You are saying that you're going to make sure that this plan is being run the way that it's supposed to. And the key to that is following the plan document, right? And that your investments are going to be suitable for your people who are in your plan. So you're really taking on, and I think that's one thing that plan sponsors, you know, business owners don't necessarily realize, is that when they're signing these plan documents and they're bringing on these plans, there are certain things that they should know to make sure that they're being run correctly for their own sake, right, as a fiduciary.
And now and then, I mean, I've read it many times, but every now and then you see a major corporation come up that basically got sued because there was a problem with the plan, or maybe the fund expense ratios weren't as competitive as they should have been with the big plan. And they actually, I've seen settlements and, you know, news clippings and such. So it does happen.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of times people get it, right? They get their 401k plan. They're like, we're doing this really great thing for our employees, which true, right? You're giving them an opportunity to save for retirement, but it's not a set it and forget it. You know, it's something that really needs to be monitored and watched and checked and cared for, really.
And I think what a lot of people don't understand is that they might start out with a plan. A lot of the times when you start with a very new plan, the expenses are more expensive because basically someone, you know, there's fees involved with the plan. But as you approach, you know, $2 million, $4 million, $10 million, you can get more and more competitive with your pricing. And sometimes people, they don't do that. So they just say, well, I started this plan 15 years ago and now I got $5 million in the plan. And those pricing numbers are not competitive.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one thing we see too, to kind of piggyback off the growth, is when people grow and their plans get bigger, they don't account for that, not only with investment fees, but with the way that you kind of run things. One important thing I just wanted to circle back to really quick with a quick kind of distinction is we talked about the participant count, right? Like 120 participants. It's not actually the amount of people who are putting money into your plan. It's the amount of people who are eligible. So I think some people don't realize too that even if you only have a handful of people contributing to your plan, if you have enough employees, you can still trigger that audit requirement.
Okay. Now, with your experience, is not you guys auditing, but the IRS, is that what percentage of these plans get random audits? I mean, I don't know if you ever read a statistic. Do you know that number?
I do not. That is not a statistic that I am familiar with.
Okay. Because I've never had an IRS audit any of our plans, but we've had the TPA come back and say, you know, this needs to be fixed, that needs to be fixed, and, you know, to be within compliant. But I just wondered, you know, how big that was. But with 80,000 more IRS auditors coming down the pipeline.
Right.
Yeah, maybe some might be put in the 401k category.
Don't know.
The biggest thing we get from business owners is a lot of times if the plan's not done right, the business owner can't maximize their contribution, the full amount. Mm-hmm. And they've come out with this thing called a safe harbor 401k, which allows the business owners to max out no matter what. And there's different levels of a safe harbor 401k, different ways to do it. So maybe you can talk a little bit about that. And for the business owners that are listening that feel their plan's not doing much for them because they can't put much away, this is called a safe harbor. So can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, I can touch on that, in a pretty broad sense, it's a pretty expansive topic with a lot of different options. So I'll just kind of hit some of them. But a plan can't favor highly compensated employees, right? Unless it has certain provisions. So a safe harbor option that you're talking about gives the plan sponsor, gives the more highly compensated employees, the business owners, right, the opportunity to save more without having that money kicked back out of the plan. And there's really unique options with safe harbor. So safe harbor, your plan does have to check some specific boxes, right? So your ability to amend is a little bit different, but you can choose how much you want to match, how much you want to contribute for your employees. But in return, you get to deem pass certain of those compliance tests that have to be run on a regular basis. So you can hopefully save more and put more into the plan without having that money kicked back out to you in tax.
I got a quick story. So we had a client who was in a plan, wasn't doing a match, just, you know, wanted the employees to participate. And, you know, his money, most of his money got kicked back every year, which means they, you know, he put too much in. They'd cut a check back to him by the end of the year, and he'd be like, I can't put this in. So what we found out is if he maxed out his 401k and the profit sharing, it would save him about $18,000 a year in taxes for him. Oh. And when it came down to the match to get the safe harbor provision, the amount that he was putting in was like $11,000. So the trade-off was pretty good. If you can save $18,000 in taxes and it costs you $11,000 to match your employees, that's kind of a no-brainer, right? You pay the IRS or you pay your employees, which hopefully you appreciate.
Unless you don't like the employees. But, you know, assume he does. You know.
Yeah.
You got to take a break, man.
Hey, we'll be right back. This is Money Talk, 560 AM.
Derek Eggeberg, branch manager with Academy Mortgage here, NMLS number 180899, with Academy Mortgage, inspiring hope, delivering dreams, and building prosperity, where we help individuals and families build a foundation for their future by providing opportunities to obtain home ownership through unique products and services. Academy Mortgage is an equal housing lender, NMLS number 3113, Arizona license number 0904081.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary, obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk. Tom Rush with Yuma Investment Group. We got Erin Lopez on the phone. She's actually going to be coming down to Yuma this Wednesday, August 24th. We're going to be doing a little lunch and learn at the college. Right next door to the Schoening Center from 12 to 4 p.m. on Wednesday. And the purpose of this is to try to get business owners in there or comptrollers or people that are involved in the 401k so that they can become educated and be more proactive than reactive on making sure that the plan runs smoothly. So before we took the break, we were talking a little bit about the Safe Harbor 401k, which is basically some rules set in place that if the owner does certain things on the matching, then they don't have to they automatically can put away the full amount for themselves. So there's different provisions as far as how much they have to put away, but the Safe Harbor 401k I think is a way to make it easier for the business owner to participate. So I don't know if you want to explain a little bit more about that, or we can move on to maybe some of the bigger issues or problems you find when you do audit a 401k. Like, what's the top three items that you find either could be done better or maybe not done right at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess just to kind of close out your safe harbor thought and to circle back to something that we talked about earlier, I think it's really important for business owners to be knowledgeable about the plan document, because then they can see what options they have that work for them, right, to maximize what they want out of the 401k plan. So I you're absolutely right that they can kind of see how that works for them. And then just to kind of go into top things that we see. So there's a lot of opportunities for plan sponsors to kind of need to make corrections for things that they're not doing in the plan. I would say some of the top things that we see are, first thing, probably not knowing who an eligible employee is. So either letting people come into the plan that shouldn't be allowed to, or not letting people come into the plan that should be allowed to. That's something that we frequently see. And if you don't know what your plan document says and you're just kind of administering it to, you know, whatever you feel like makes the most sense, right? You just hired someone, they kind of want to participate, why not let them in? That can be a recipe for, like you said, potentially disqualification of like the tax sheltered status of the plan, or correction. We've seen corrections for things like that from a couple $1,000s to $250,000.
And not only that, but if they get in too early, it means the employer is going to be matching. So indirectly, it's costing the employer too, right?
Yeah, it costs the employer money, and then when they figure it out, they might have to go back and fix it, and then it's going to cost them time.
Yep. And then as far as, so one thing about the plans is you really can't discriminate and say, well, this is a manager that I really want to hire, so we'll start him quickly, but someone else who's not as important, you know, so you're saying you can't treat everybody the same with the plan, with the enrollment.
Right. Treat everybody the way your plan document says they have to be treated. Right. And what we've heard, like, okay, well, we wanted this guy and he wanted to contribute, so we put it in his offer letter. Right.
Yeah.
That he could come in, or, you know, we verbally told him that he could come in and now we're bound to that. But you have a plan document that says differently.
Yeah.
That doesn't have that carve out. So yeah, just things like that to just be aware of.
Yeah. No, I do a lot of, I have quite a few plans with doctors, and they're always looking for good help, especially like a physician's assistant or a nurse practitioner. And, you know, they really try to offer things to get them in. And I've seen exactly what you just talked about, how things get offered more than what the plan documents show.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what are some of the penalties, I guess, if you don't pass an audit or you get audited? There could be some monetary penalties, and then you also mentioned that the plan could become taxable. Can you explain just kind of a what could happen scenario if things didn't go right?
Absolutely. So I would say the biggest thing that we see is missed deferral opportunity corrections. So they may not necessarily be considered penalties, but they're required corrections for your plan to be in compliance. So just to give like a very brief overview of what that might look like. Let's say somebody who should have been able to participate didn't get the opportunity, right? Because you didn't tell them or you told them they couldn't.
Okay.
Well, let's hypothetical, they should have been contributing for a year. And then let's say they probably would have contributed $12,000. The plan sponsor actually becomes responsible for part of what the participant would have put in the plan.
Dang.
Yep. And if that happens with multiple employees, right, multiple people, multiple participants, it can start to add up. So in the sense of penalties, right, it may not be necessarily considered a penalty that's being assessed by the Department of Labor, but it is something that you want your plan to be in compliance. You have to fix it the way the IRS guidelines, the DOL guidelines say that you need to fix it. And that is, you know, can be monetarily quite impactful. And time, again, I can't stress enough, the amount of time that it takes to go in and do some of these corrections can be lengthy, right? Because there's a lot of data, a lot of research, a lot of corrections factors that go into it.
So a lot of times if it's pretty heavy to fix something, then business owners look elsewhere, whether they're CPA, which, you know, the CPA is going to bill them, or maybe they find someone like yourself who can help them, and I'm sure you guys got a billing rate. So it involves man hours, which usually equates to dollars, especially for someone in your office spending, you know, a week trying to fix something.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Now, I don't stay too in tune with changes in the four. I mean, when changes come down, I think I read enough newsletters and things to understand what's going on. But has there been many changes, I don't know, the last 6-12 months, or with the 401k programs, or is there anything new on the horizon that you might share with people? And I'm just asking.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say some of the biggest changes impact a plan audit. That there's actually new changes that are rolling out for 2021 audits. So if your plan needs an audit, the most impactful changes are going to be some shift of responsibility to the business owner, to the plan administrator. So there's just kind of a push for business owners to be more knowledgeable and to take more responsibility for certain pieces. Those are directly related to the audit. I would say some of the other things that are coming down that will affect smaller plans we'll actually cover on Wednesday that are really important to be aware of, because it's going to affect the way people get to enter the plan and the way that they get to that plan sponsors have to keep track of those people. So that's actually one thing that we're going to talk about on Wednesday as a change that's coming up there.
Now, people that have plans, business owners, every now and then you're kind of forced to do an amendment to a plan because of the federal government status. Mm-hmm. And when there's an amendment, there's a cost. So can you talk a little bit about when the government requires an amendment to the plan? And that happens usually every 2-3 years, right, give or take?
Yeah, so actually we just finished going through the third cycle restatement. So what that means is every few years, it's 6 years, every 6 years a plan sponsor has to completely restate their plan document to incorporate all those changes, right? So like I'm sure everybody's heard of the CARES Act. There were certain provisions from the CARES Act that impacted 401k plans. And so plans have to, you know, like you said, be amended, be restated to include those provisions that have rolled out mm-hmm. over the past couple of years. So in reality, a lot of plan sponsors out there should actually have a brand new document that they just recently got, if not last month, over the last year, because their plan just got restated. So really good opportunity for plan sponsors to get re-familiar with their plan and the new provisions that are in it.
Sure. So it's a moving, I mean, it's an IRS document that is a moving animal. It will morph, change, has to be kept up. You can't mm-hmm. just put it on a shelf and forget about it for 10 years.
Exactly. Yeah. You can't still operate your plan using the one you signed when you started the plan back in 1999. You're probably going to have a few versions of it now.
Sure. Well, you know, I know there's some statistics out there that says if employers have a retirement plan, the employees feel a lot more likely to hang around and not look for another job. And what percentage of, you know, I don't know if you know the stat, but percentage of businesses that have a actual retirement plan, do you have any idea what that number is?
I am not familiar with what the stat is. I would say that a lot of business owners offer it. Even if they don't offer a match, they're offering it for the reason that you just said.
Yeah. Well, down here in Yuma County, I would say it's probably like 20%, maybe, I mean, 25. And I'm talking all business owners. So it's not as common as what you would think. Because usually there's some, you know, fee charges involved to get a plan in place. And then there's the monitoring of the plan. So a lot of small business owners, I think, you know, try to opt out, or they don't want to mess with it. But once you get to a certain size, if you're going to be competitive and keep your employees around, it almost becomes a must. If there's not a match, at least offer it so they can put money away. The last thing you want to do is have an employee work for you for 25 years, and then they pretty much, you know, retire broke, right? That's not a good feeling.
No.
Right.
So that was a now let's just say if a business owner had some hard times, I know COVID did some things with restaurants and, you know, shut things down. Can these there's some rules where the plans could be froze, right, for like a year or two? Can you talk a little bit about that for hardship?
Yeah, there were. Yeah, there were. So back when the it kind of started with the CARES Act, right? So when the CARES Act went in place, it did give the owners, business owners, the opportunity to, if they wanted to, pause their match that they were given, right? Because the plan document dictates what the match, how long they have to match, everything like that. And it also requires a certain amount of notification when you're going to stop doing match. So the CARES Act, you know, to not get into it too deep, kind of gave business owners opportunity to reduce costs, right? So especially when they were kind of feeling the hardship of what was going on with the pandemic, in order to not terminate the plan, they gave them some opportunities to reduce costs to still leave it in place for their employees.
I see. So there is some wiggle room as far as trying to accommodate the employer if there's been a change in their business sales and such.
Right, yeah, but because they wanted to be able, right, the assumed intention behind it would be, we want you to keep your 401k plan, right? Because we think it's a great opportunity for people to save.
Right.
You know, they need to be ready for retirement, but we realize it's hard times. Yeah. So what can we do? And that's what they did for participants too. They said the same thing, because people taking their money out of the plan is pretty strictly regulated, right? They can only do it if they're old enough or if they don't work for the company. And so the CARES Act kind of opened up for that year some opportunities for people to take money out of the plan a little bit easier than they would have been able to, so that if they were experiencing those, you know, financial hardships, they were impacted, they would have the opportunity to use those funds for themselves.
Sure. Hey, we're going to take another break here. This is Money Talk, 5, 6 a.m.
Derek Eggeberg, branch manager with Academy Mortgage here, NMLS number 180899, with Academy Mortgage, inspiring hope, delivering dreams, and building prosperity, where we help individuals and families build a foundation for their future by providing opportunities to obtain home ownership through unique products and services. Academy Mortgage is an equal housing lender, NMLS number 3113, Arizona license number 0904081.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary, obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.
Good morning, Yuma. This is Money Talk, 5-6 a.m. Tom Rush here, Yuma Investment Group. We're talking to Erin Lopez, who's a CPA out of Phoenix. She's involved in auditing 401k plans, and we're actually doing a lunch and learn this Wednesday, August 24th. From noon to 4 p.m., we'll provide a little box lunch out at AWC next to the Schoening Center. And Erin's going to be talking about different things that she sees to try to get employers to have their plan run smoothly and also understand exactly what the plan could do, the plan documents, and other, I call them bells and whistles that might not be used. The employer might not be using it, although the employer might want to use it, but just doesn't either think about it or even know it's an option. So good morning, Erin, again.
Good morning.
So as far as getting people that are enrolling too soon or not enrolling at the right time, very important when people don't want to enroll that the employer has them sign something and put in their file so that they can't come back and say, you know, I never was able to participate, and the business owner says, yeah, you were, but I can't prove it.
I never thought of that.
Yeah. So
that's a very good point.
And then once a year, I mean, that plan document, is there a rule when it has to be signed? Like if I decline to put money in, you can't just wait 10 years and say, well, I asked him 10 years ago and he didn't want to do it. I think that form has to be updated, what, annually maybe for good practice?
For good practice, right, it just kind of depends on how often you're kind of telling your employees about it. But as far as an internal control, we do recommend having everything in writing when it comes to employees. And that includes not only opting out, to your point, Tom, but any changes. So we highly recommend against hallway talk changes, right? Sure. So like someone catches you in the hallway and they're like, hey, Tom, can you up me to 4%? Great. You know, and then you go in and do it and there's no, there's no trail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. And then there's also a component to a 401k, and they all have them, is a profit sharing component. And a lot of times businesses that I see aren't really ready for profit sharing, but as they go on, you know, then they you have to keep bringing to their attention. Well, do you realize if you did this, you can sometimes you can use a profit sharing to motivate the clients even more as far as, hey, if we hit this threshold, you know, we can throw in 10 grand to the profit sharing. Hit this threshold, we can throw in, you know, 20. So it's a good tool that I think a lot of business owners overlook, profit sharing component. I don't know if you want to say anything about that or what you've dealt with.
Yeah, as far as motivating, you know, kind of employees to participate with that, I think that's a really great conversation to have with your CPA or even your TPA to figure out, you know, what benefits it is to the employer and the employee. But it is typically an option in almost every 401k plan. It gives you that option if you so feel inclined to do it after year end. So it's nice to have that option in your plan.
Yeah, and then I also know that if you are putting away or matching employees' money, kind of like a safe harbor, that you actually, in a profit-sharing plan, you can be selective on putting more into the employees that are highly compensated. So like most business owners have key employees that are, you know, more, the company needs them more, they're producing more. You can be a little bit more selective on who you're going to match as long as the minimums are met. Is that correct?
I would say, just to kind of circle back, not to be repetitive, but that is exactly the key to being familiar with your plan document and what options you have. Because your plan document will actually dictate your allocation, how you do it, what you do it based on. So that's actually critical if you want to do something to the way that you're saying, is making sure that your plan's set up so that if that's the option that you wanted, you have the correct boxes checked.
Sure. Now, the 5500, which, can you talk a little bit about that? That's a tax filing form that the TPA files for the plan. Can you kind of broadly talk about that for the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you have a 401k plan, you have to file a 5500. So the difference is, like, for your individual, right, you have your 1040 EZ and your 1040. Well, with 5500, you have your 5500 short form, so SS, and you have your form 5500. So your short form is going to be for plans that don't need that audit. They're going to be for the small filers. And then your form 5500 is going to be for your plans that do need that audit. So the main difference between the two is information, right? Your form 5500 is going to have quite a bit more information. It's typically like a 20-25 page form, depending on what you need. And the short form is exactly true to its name. It's a short form. The full form typically needs to be filed with an auditor's opinion, which is why you would get the audit if you're a larger filer.
I see. So there's, again, a lot of rules, a lot of things that you got to keep the ducks in a row on.
Yeah. Absolutely. Kind of be aware of your requirements, everything that you kind of have to do.
Well, Tom, you keep talking about the rules also. Are you trying to discourage people from getting them?
No, but it's, you know, it's one of those things you gotta take.
But to stay on top of the rules and everything, it's like a once a year thing, isn't it? I mean, just take a look at it.
Yeah. I mean, if you stay on top of things, I mean, and train your staff to, you know, have procedures in place, it's not as hard as you think. But it is something that if you're going to commit to a plan, you also want to commit to the work of keeping the plan compliant, because it does involve work. And people think, you know, I'll spend 2 minutes a year on my plan and life will be great, and it doesn't work that way.
But now when you go through the plan, Tom, and you want to, you know, take a look at it, I don't know if you do that annually, sit and take a look, make sure you've dotted all your I's, would you call somebody like Aaron, just a counsel?
So not necessarily her, but usually what you lean on is the TPA,
okay,
which is a third-party administrator who understands the rules and such. And not to say I wouldn't call Aaron, but the TPAs can answer, and they're in the trenches doing the 5500. So that's who we go to.
Because we all know the federal government, if they're making changes, there's so many, you're not going to keep up with them as individuals. Somebody that specializes.
Yeah, the TPA is involved in keeping up.
Okay, they're the ones that are going to keep up with the current rules, the current.
Yeah, because that's signing off on the 5500. So I believe they sign off for that, don't they? Or is that just a business owner?
It depends on your arrangement with them. Okay. So in some instances, you know, the level of services that you have with the TPA, I've seen the TPA sign it. But I would say a lot of times the business owner.
And they get prepared by the TPA.
I know you guys keep saying TPA, but third-party administrator.
Third-party administrator.
Yeah, third-party administrator.
In case someone's listening.
It's not IPA, TPA.
But now, Aaron, are you ever a third-party administrator, or you just stick to the audits?
We are not a third-party administrator. We are strictly the auditor.
Strictly the auditor.
There's no third-party administrator here in Yuma.
There isn't?
There isn't. So a lot of, you know, the business owners are like, my CPA would do this or that. And
right.
Yes and no, they don't. There's no, because it's a niche service.
Yeah.
And I don't think, you know, you can make a living in Yuma unless you maybe had clients from outside of Yuma.
Sure.
So we get in contact with TPAs from Phoenix, Tucson, San Diego.
Somebody's real specialized just in that one thing.
Correct.
Okay. Yep.
So Aaron, we got about, I don't know, 3-4 more minutes left. Any things you want to bring up that would entice someone to come to this seminar? To me, it's all education.
You mentioned lunch. Lunch would be an enticement.
Box lunch. But I always tell my staff, you know, knowledge is power. Yeah, knowledge is power with anything.
Knowledge is, yeah.
And if you can understand more how the plan works, or if you could find one or two things that would help make your plan better, and maybe the employer is not aware of, hey, that's a neat function that we can use, but I didn't really think about it.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily messing something that would get you in trouble, but it's messing something that would mean you're spending more than you should, or you're not saving as much as you should.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like having a car and you realize, oh, I have an air conditioning in my car. I never knew that. I could turn on, or, you know, I have something I could, a light in the back that I never knew I could turn on to see things. So a lot of the plans, I think the business owners, you know, when you first do a plan, it's a lot of information. And a lot of times the business owners aren't as maybe financially, but as they get more and more, make more money, there's these boxes that you didn't check before that you should go back and look at again.
Oh, so you can take use of some of those accessories.
Yeah, accessories, cars. Yep. I gave the car analogy because I know you can understand and relate to what I was saying. So
yeah, I'm pretty simple-minded. Yep.
So, hey, Aaron, thanks for coming on the show. We're going to be, hopefully people could come see you August 24th from noon to 4. We're giving this lunch and learn about 401ks, how to be proactive, not reactive. Please call our office if anybody out there is interested, 329-1700. Ask for Kayla, 329-1700. And I'll let you go, Aaron, but thanks again.
All right. Thank you both so much.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye. All right. You got about a couple minutes here, buddy. It's only you got three. Two. You got 2 minutes.
Hey, I like to do a shout-out. Today's my wife's birthday.
What?
Yep. Now, if you ask me how old, I'll probably
I'm not going to ask. I'm going to ask what you got her is what I'm asking.
I did get her something.
Wow, that's improvement.
We usually don't, but okay. We did. So anyways, happy birthday, Sandy, and hope you have a great day today.
Good for
you. This is Money Talk, 5-6 a.m. Be right back, or see you next weekend.
1 hour air conditioning and heating studio. This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.